when I fail, when I don't achieve what I wanted, if I don't take it as the end of the world, and then I just review and take as a lesson why went wrong, why I failed. And if you use any failure, any setbacks as a learning experience, and actually it will evolve, it'll make you a better person.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for joining me for the latest episode of the Run to the Top podcast, brought to you by Runners Connect. So last week, you listened in on me talking to my strength coach, Drew Watts, and he shared some of my insights, what we've been doing, and how you can reduce your risk of injuries in the future. Hopefully you enjoyed that one, even though I know it was a lot focused around my training, but I know a lot of people have requested that, so hopefully it was okay. So people tend to fall into buckets for a lot of topics, one of which is optimist or pessimist. Which do you fall into? I know I'm definitely an optimist. But what if you were just focused on surviving, on making it through another day? I mean, we forget how easy our lives are. You know, obviously we have ups and downs, but we don't actually just have to worry about just living. But what if you were in that situation? And that's exactly what my guest today had to tell himself when he was being tortured and as he fled Ethiopia during the Civil War in 1970. Since then, he's lived his life motivating others and has tried to make a difference in the world. And difference in the world he has definitely made. You're going to hear his story, you're going to hear his insights, and just he's just such an infectiously great guy to be around. It just makes you feel good about yourself and just excited for what you can achieve. So Ted Gilletta is a world-class masters runner. He's a motivational speaker, no surprise there. A Hall of Fame athlete, he's won a Queen's Jubilee medal, he's carried the Olympic torch, and he's just an all-round inspiration. So are you ready to go meet him? Let's hear a word from Jabra, and then we'll get right to it. Multiple studies have proven running with music helps to improve performance. I have become addicted to my Jabra Pulse sport headphones, using them for almost every easy run, but shh, don't tell my coach. You will love these earbuds too, and you can enter to win a free set every month by visiting jabra.com/runnersconnect. I'm just going to pause for a second and then we'll begin, okay? Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Ted.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you fitting me in here. I mean, we're going to get into this a little bit later, but I can only imagine how busy you are right now. So this is going to be a really interesting one, I can tell. So I want to start from the very beginning. And if you could kind of share your story, starting with, you know, you're initially born in Ethiopia. And, you know, you have quite an interesting background. And I know this is going to be very motivational for people. So maybe if you could share your story wherever you would like to begin.
Well, I came to Canada, Regina, Saskatchewan, 1982. I was about 26 years old and left Ethiopia during Civil War, that's in the 70s, and it's quite turmoil in Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. It's not just I decided to leave my country because I was forced to leave my country, and I lived in 1978 for 1 year in a refugee camp in Sudan, and left end of 78 to Kenya. And lived there for 3.5 years and came to Canada in 1982. So I was accepted as a refugee by Canadian government, and I was randomly assigned to resettle in Regina, Saskatchewan.
Okay. And then you said about, you know, you did leave or flee during the Civil War. Will you share with us what happened with the... You know, obviously not specific details there. I'm sure they're kind of upsetting for you, but you were involved in, you know, peaceful demonstrations, and you did go through some bad times after that. So could you maybe share with our listeners what kind of happened there and how that affected your life, the rest of your life, really, with your attitude?
Well, when at the time, and then I was in high school, young man, and I was the first time generation to attend school in my village, and even my mom and dad even could not read or write, and everybody was excited, and someone, you know, completed up to grade 12. And my running is, of course, and suddenly I was discovered, become a good runner, and life was just good. And and I was set, you know, to go to university and also part of the Ethiopian elite team. And running is, you know, huge in Ethiopia, similar to Canada or US, and that's equivalent to NHL hockey or basketball. So I was excited to go in the same time. And of course, the civil war and Ethiopia was going through a rough time. At the time, Ethiopia was governed by monarchy system. So there's a resentment from the peasants towards the monarchy. And that monarchy, and also, of course, the movement was run by the students, by young people. I was part of that. And in 1976, and in a civil protest, and just our dissatisfaction expressing, you know, to oppose any change of freedom of speech and land to tenants, those kind of basic democratic right protests, and randomly military start firing their weapon towards the protest, and I was cut short, and of course arrested, and spent more than 6 months in the jail, and I was luckily again managed to escape through riot, and from then, and of course, and spent walking several days to get to my village where my family were. Yeah. And that's 1976, and 1976, 78, part of 78, I was hiding. And finally, when they find out that I was hiding, and of course the militia was just heading towards our village, and that's close to Sudanese border, I managed to escape. And when they arrived there, and of course they burned and everything, grain bins, and my family home was burned, torched down, and they have to run away and to restart the life again. So, and for me, I could not go back to Ethiopia, and I just ran away, and I was a young man and unknown future, and became homeless, and struggled for many years, and came to Canada. And it comes Canada, and they gave me a second chance and to rebuild my life here, of course. And I have to work very hard and just to recover those lost years, and went back to school and made my life here. And I have two boys and beautiful wife, and I can't complain. Life is good.
Oh, well, I'm glad it has ended well, and you've kind of, you know, turned things around. And when you did initially move to Canada, was it on your own, or were you with your family at the time?
No, just me. Even my family didn't know. Even in Canada at the time, we are unable to communicate because of the system was so, you know, it's very hard to connect with the family. That time, communication is not used to be that 30 years ago, maybe you weren't born. That's a totally different world that time. And simplest long distance calls was so expensive. But even my mom and dad, they didn't know, even I was in Canada. And I think the first time unable to have a connect with them, about I was 82, I came. So 1987, wow. First town, actually, they knew I was alive. They thought I was dead. So that's a different story. But when first I arrived Canada, as I was by myself, in a way, advantageous. Actually, I didn't have any child. I was young and able to, you know, live in a very simple life and to upgrade my education and, you know, make sure and everything is right for myself before I had family. So that in a way is advantageous. Yes, it was by myself, and it was very tough, and to immerse in language and social norms. And imagine Canada was very cold, and and even those simplest things was very hard to adapt. But, you know, worked hard, and took me at least 15 years to feel even comfortable. And in the same time, I went my running actually helped me who I am today. So that simple run helped me to immerse quicker.
Mm-hmm. And during that time, I mean, obviously you wouldn't have been able to run while you were kind of in hiding, and, you know, while all that was going on, I'm guessing that running was completely pushed out of the picture. Did it take you a while to, you know, even try it again? Or was it something that as soon as you moved to Canada, it kind of brought you some comfort and like reminded you of something that brought you joy when you were at home?
Yes, at that time, and you know, basic, even, you know, thing, food, you know, what you have for breakfast and what for lunch. That's my worry at that time. I thought my running was over, and sometimes just sit and dream about it. And that time, absolutely, you are right. The running was just done, and I also picked up smoking when I was there.
Talk about the other extreme.
It is that, just to relieve the stress. And I came to Canada, and you know, when we arrived, I didn't know anyone. So there are few refugees and from Eastern Europe and escaping from the communist persecution, and also I'm sure you can recall a Reddit and Vietnam, the boat people arriving the same time, and we have a commenting together, and every Sunday get together just for coffee and just, you know, talk about the conceivable negative thing happens and challenges we are facing, and you know, sometimes the resistance you know, to acceptance by local people, that's understandable, and I would just, you know, get tired of that, actually, you know. You know, that I needed some different thing. And around 1984, and we have a big park in Regina called Wascana Park, and sit there and smoking, and I see the people running by, just jogging noon hours. Hey, you know what? And I could just take my running, and that's, I'm good at it. And I remember throwing in my pocket of cigarette. I just stopped one of the gentlemen running. I stopped and I said, I'm a member of YMCA. Why don't you come and see me? So I went there and met him, and we start jogging together, and you know, I just told my running background, and I told him the time I ran. He was just lying with his food, was, you know. And so anyway, I wanted actually to connect with them, and began running and joined YMCA. We went, you know, 10K running. I remember 1984, and I didn't have much training, and I was running close to 30 minutes or faster that time. You know, I just lined up all this. I knew I was a front runner, and I just then went up and running, and after 100 meters, I was just gasping, and I ended up running 46 minutes. I remember that, and I said, oh my God. And that was in May, and around September, I just keep running, and again, another race, and actually ended up running 37 minutes. Wow. And again, trained, and, you know, end of the year, you know, by this fall and run close to 36 minutes, and the following year run 33, 32, and suddenly just things, you know, within a year. And the people are just, who this guy, where he came from? And that person, you know, came talk to me. Actually, I didn't believe you when you told me. So after that, then met wonderful people, and they helped me to immerse and just to adapt, and but that actually helped me more to be, just to have a self-confidence. Actually, when you perform that level, just my self-esteem just went high, and the rest is history.
Yeah, wow, that's very interesting, and just amazing to see, you know, you said of how high of a level you were at in Ethiopia, and, you know, the fact that you were able, your ego was kind of allowing you to run a 46-minute 10K, and you didn't let that kind of be like, okay, I'm done with this, I don't want to do this again. Like, you allowed yourself to kind of keep chasing those improvements. And I think it's good for people to hear that. And just out of curiosity, what kind of times were you running? Maybe you didn't have official, but what kind of times were you running when you were in Ethiopia?
In Ethiopia, you know, I was, you know, in Ethiopia and high altitude, if you run 30 minutes, if you go to Europe sea level, that's an equivalent to maybe 8, half, and maybe in high 27s. And that's what it is. And I was running barely, a little bit under 30 minutes. Wow. Or close to 30 minutes. I was a junior that time. So I was 17, 18 years old. I was running that time. When I was 19, 20s, because of war, of course, my dreams were faded away. And so I never see more that high level of training, and I would have run well. And so when I came to Canada, you know, I started running when I was about 29, about 30 years old. And so by the middle of 30, I was running, you know, under 30. So even when I was 42, in my early middle 40s, I was running half marathon about hour and five. So,
wow.
You know, someone at the master running that time, imagine when you are early 20s or when you were teen, if you properly trained and imagine things, you are able to run.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, yeah, we are going to go on to talk about your master's career, which, you know, has brings on its whole new set of inspiration and accomplishments that you achieved. But when you, you know, you said that running kind of brought you this peace and it was very comforting to you. But what is it about running specifically that you just really enjoy and always have enjoyed?
Well, running is to me, you know, when you have stress, as you know, solo, when you run, that's why I reflect everything and think about your family and what I'm going to be doing. And even during the process of writing my biography, and that's the time I just used to run, run carry with the recording device, and just that's where a just clear picture of the piece when I run by myself, my long run, and mm-hmm. just the mumble and just point the things came to my mind. That's the time. And it just gave me freedom and just to float and to run. And sometimes even going back when I was a little boy in Africa, running barefoot and just reflect those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely. And I'm sure that brings back some, you know, positive memories for you of like an earlier time, but a great time for you. And that's great. And you did mention you had your autobiography. So let's before we move on, let's talk a little bit about that. Do you want to tell us a bit about what, you know, why you decided to share your story and, you know, how that came together?
Before the biography, and because of the sport, and I get often invited to speak in the school and mm-hmm. public places, and usually during my speaker, I just show some of the, you know, things I went through, why I came to Canada, about the war and some of the struggle and being in prison, tortured, and those kind of things, and just that people more get interested. And I was approached by publishing, and I said, no, probably not. It was hard. And also, you know, not me, actually, about my family as well.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine that would be the case. And especially if it was, you know, you're away from them for that long, that would bring up lots of very traumatic things. And, you know, that's very brave of you to share it with us. And, you know, you have become a motivational speaker, you know, all over the world. And so let's talk about your master's career. You were ranked 7th in the world by Runner's World in 1997 as a master. But do you think that those struggles you did go through, did they give you an extra motivation to be successful? Did it give you an extra level to dig down because you know what you'd been through? Or was it always just, you know, you always had that from the very, very beginning?
I loved competing, and in the same time, and, you know, I just, when I turned and just absolutely, you know, a struggle I went through, as you said, give me motivation to do, and at the same time, mm-hmm. Still I run, and that's within me, and even in, if every day I run here, unless a family issue holds me back. And yes, and enjoyed, and you know, people met wonderful people, even mm-hmm. Like Rob De Castella, Steve Jones, you know, they get the British man to run. You know who he is?
Yep.
Actually, him and I shared the room, actually, in Tampa when we went running. And then even people I looked up, they are my age. And, you know, I used to watch them and run, and you know, I would be running with them, but at the end, end up running against them during my master career. I traveled all over places and brought, you know, a lot of, just I would say, unfinished business in my mind. And mm-hmm. the one, you know, I didn't get a chance to perform that level in my early prime years.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, you went on to do so much, and I love hearing that you traveled the world. What was your favorite place you visited, just out of curiosity?
You know, the most of my favorite actually have been New Orleans, and my favorite Falmouth in the Massachusetts, but just the coast of Martha's Vineyard. Mm-hmm. They call Falmouth the 7-mile run, and I was invited.
I'm doing that race this year.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Is it first time?
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful, which is gorgeous place. And I do have my friends, and I stay with them. Even here, we are thinking, even we may go visit there with my family. And that's one of my favorite places. And that's another one, and then New Orleans, and a few places, and I've run, went, and so Tampa, and just you name it, and just the absolutely gorgeous place in the US. So I enjoy doing that. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Every place has its own unique thing, which I love. So then I can't even begin to list all the awards you've won. You know, Hall of Fame, Queen's Jubilee. You've won all kinds of awards, but one that really caught my eye. Well, I don't know if it's so much an award, but you did carry the Olympic torch. So could you maybe share with us about that moment and what it meant to you?
Yes, the Olympic torch is actual. I felt like I was, the one opportunity I missed to be. I would have gone. I was confident I would have gone 1980 Olympics if I have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's when I was actually carrying torch. And that's, to relieve that, a missed opportunity. And then I was so delighted, and I felt like and have an opportunity actually to, I felt like actually I've been a member of team. So it gave me, that's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity just to reflect back.
Yeah, no, that's something that I think we all would love to have the opportunity to do at some point. And can you share with us, you know, you did say it was a missed opportunity. What was it that happened that prevented you from running in that 1980 Olympics?
Oh, 1980, and I was a part of the groom to be, you know, high caliber Olympian.
Mm-hmm.
And when war broke out, I was away.
That was, of course, yeah, during that time. And then by the time you kind of got going again, it was a little bit too late for, like, to run.
Yeah, to run, and I was in refugee camp, and all my 20s was I was looking place to reestablish. I was in Canada. Still, those few years was a quite big struggle to adjust for me. So I didn't get chance even to train.
Mm-hmm. And what is it about being in Canada that you love the most now that you've been there for many, many years?
In Canada, I just, you know, I was so grateful, and they gave me a second chance to establish myself, to mm-hmm. have a home. And I was stateless, and to have an opportunity to give a shot mm-hmm. at life and at general, not only awards and honorary doctorate, law degree, and all those things. But as be productive member and very active and well respected in the community, and in the position, even to empower and to give back to community. Even the last 20 years, mm-hmm. I do have a sort of foundation. I raised close to 700,000 for local charity, including building a school in Africa.
That's amazing. Oh, what a way to give back. And did you kind of know as soon as you moved to Canada, or as soon as you kind of fled Ethiopia, that you wanted to do your part to make a difference in the world? I mean, we're going to go on in a minute to some of the things you've done recently with that. But did you kind of always feel like you wanted to be a leader and someone who made a difference?
Well, that kind of leadership, actually, I credited my mother. She's the one, and still at my early age, and she was a community leader in mm-hmm. the village.
Oh.
So that, and also being a student council leader when I was in high school, and I do have that desire. In Canada, I never thought even, do this thing or run for office or to be asked. And just a while ago, I received a call if I want to run for mayor, actually, a mayor, civic election coming up. But I said, it's not the right time for him. But things just evolve itself. For me, when I do, just I don't brag, just one thing that happens. I found for new things. Just things happens. When that happens, that opportunity, and I tend to capitalize and just keep doing so that's who I am, and always I like to be part of the community activities, and always focus on the positive things. And if I have to just complain, I do have a ton of negative things have happened. I would be consumed, and then always just feel sorry for myself, and I avoid all those negative things and just focus on positives.
So how do you do that for someone maybe who is listening right now, and they tend to, listening to a story like yours is always going to hopefully change the way people think. But if someone listening is really struggling with staying positive right now, what would you like to tell them?
Well, in a way, the life as whole, and it's not smooth. It just has to be a bump. And some of those bump, when I fail, when I don't achieve what I wanted, if I don't take it as the end of the world, and then I just review and take as a lesson why I went wrong, why I failed. And if you use any failure, any setbacks as a learning experience, and actually it will evolve, it'll make you a better person. If everything is so smooth to me, anyway, personally, in my opinion, some people may think this is weird, but it's actually make you a better person. Mm-hmm. And even we have a setback, and even if you lack some sort of being compassionate to others, and it'll make you think about that why, and I should that be even health issues and financial setbacks and bankruptcy and all those things. And to me, if it just why that happened, and you have to be responsible whatever happens to you. Everybody have choices to make, and then also you have a right choices also to make a decision to make that change. And for me, I just take as a lesson and learn about that and just carry on. And just focus why the good things happen to you.
So would you say you do a lot of analysis then when something does go wrong, you kind of look at all the things that could have caused that? Or is it you just kind of let it roll off your back and say, okay, you know, this is going wrong, but this is good?
That's depending the situation. Mm-hmm. Depending the situation, and some just really let it go, and some just have to analyze then what went wrong. And this another, that's the past election, and we lost by 144, very close loss. That one, we have to analyze then what went wrong, and again, to avoid such a close loss for next election. And we those kind of bigger scales, as I analyze, but the short ones, not really, no, mm-hmm. don't. Just let it go, and that's what it is, and move on.
And just to clarify for people who you know, you and I have talked a bit before, but so you were recently nominated for the Pro Legislative Assembly of Saskatchewan. But what did that involve for people who may not know what that means?
It's the parliamentary system, the provincial legislative assembly. That's where it's the lawmakers and the legislators. That's why we make a decision, the budgets, and this governing body of, like, you know, Canada have 10 provinces, and so those 10 provinces combine the federal. So we have 61 MLAs. That's a member of the legislative assembly. We have we do have to compete for that seat. So I ran for one of the city seats. So that's where the election was last April.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of things did you learn during that experience? I mean, I'm guessing that you learned a lot about the world of politics and just kind of how how you could make a difference in the world. But did you see any parallels with running, or was there anything that kind of stood out to you about this process?
It is similar in a way, the same. But running is, we don't have much emotional stress, but this, yes, of course, it does. And I learn a lot listening to people, issues, matters for them, and, for all walks of life. And the issues for, amazing things about politics and what the issue matters for you, but somebody's issues may not be matter for you, especially young mothers and income inequality, people living in poverty, and the seniors, the healthcare. Education, and just listening, that was so incredible history and experience, positive experience I have, and just to voice for them dealing with such a complex issue. And similarly, the fitness actually came when we were knocking doors sometimes for 7-8 hours a day. We knocked doors, so I remember even the people younger than me, and after 2-3 hours, they could not do it. And then I just walking 9 hours, and I get high, and just take a break and just keep going. And so, yes, it does help mental toughness, discipline, to listen for others, what they have to say, rather than telling them what's good for them. That was just an extraordinary experience. Politics never been new to me, but it's a democratic process, the same in Britain and here. It's not like if you just protest or if you criticize the government, you go to jail. Mm-hmm. We have a freedom of speech, and we can write, I can blog, and I can give a statement, but in Ethiopia, and then if we're there. And remember after my nomination night, and I was speaking my brother home, and he was so worried. And Javi, you know, what the hell are you doing? And because of politics, and you left Ethiopia, and now your adopted country, I hope they don't kick you out. And I said, you know, Gadamu, his name is Gadamu. I said, no, in Canada, it's not like that. And you do carry on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. And so you have maintained a good relationship with your family? Like, do you talk to them often?
Yes, often nowadays in Skype, or usually in phone calls, Facebook and FaceTime, and just things have changed in the last 30 years and mm-hmm. since I came to Canada.
Yeah, the world of technology. And I'd love to hear kind of a little insight. When was the last time you went back to visit, or do you go back often?
In Ethiopia, prior to 1991, I could not go because, yep. you know, the government changed in 1991 when Ethiopia was a part of the Eastern Bloc, with the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, the regime also collapsed and changed. And after 24 years absence, I went back 1999, and I met my family. And you know, always probably, I don't know about you, but me, when I left Ethiopia, you know, suddenly you just wake up and you left and ran away from my life. And even though I came to Canada, I established all my life here, and I felt like still I struggle with that home. I call it home. And in the terms of residence, I do have a home, but I still lack that peace.
Yeah.
And when I went back, just I thought, you know, would change, but when it's going to be the same, and it wasn't. Things have changed just since I left, and my peers, I grew up, and they moved on, they passed on, and this generation, that's long time. And just when came back, it gave me some sense of closure. It is actually helped me so often. After that, I went a few times, and now I know Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada is my home.
Okay, well, that's great. And I don't think I've quite let go yet either. I still say home is back in England. And yeah, that's I do say home here as well. But it, like you said, in my heart, it's England is always going to be my true home.
Yeah, it is. You know, I remember, you know, until 99, you go to a tourist, I go to Mexico somewhere in Europe, and I've been there. And, you know, if you go there, that tourism or you go to visit and as a temporary, you have a home, you have to go back. Mm-hmm. But even I felt until 99, I felt Canada, just always in my mind, I was a temporary here.
Yes.
It's not home, and I'm going to go somewhere. But I never knew what that go where home was. And good thing is now going back and just brought the closure.
Mm-hmm. And I bet that was a good moment for you, kind of realizing like you finally found that place where you felt like you belong, and you know, realize that Canada does want you. And I definitely can empathize with that. I felt the same way with the US, like, you know, people were just waiting for a reason to kick me out. So yeah. I definitely can feel you, but it must have been a special moment for you when you realized that you do have a home there.
Yeah, it is. It's abroad. And I have my kids and wife here, and this is home. So now just brought some sort of peace.
Mm-hmm. Have you taken some of your little cultural things, maybe like meals that you had, or maybe some little things that you've kind of taken along with you and shown your kids and your wife?
Yeah, we do. Actually, there's an Ethiopian restaurant here locally, mm-hmm. and we go. Actually, they love that spicy food, and still we connect. I have paintings and some of the, you know, stuff I brought from home. So we plan to go back again in a few, 2 years, and I have a 5 years old, and I have also older son in his 20s.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And then when you do go back, I'm guessing you do see, or maybe even join in with some of the running that goes on there. Have you seen a difference in the way that Ethiopia kind of approaches running since, you know, obviously during the Civil War time, it would have been very different. But in recent years, have you seen more of a focus on running, or is it still kind of the same as it was?
Well, no, things have changed. It's extremely have evolved. some just incredible. I guess the way of they see it now as a business, the way of and also running have changed so much, people's life. And if you look at it, even now, we don't see a lot of people shifting from track and just road race and marathon. That's the money is in 20, 25 years. When someone unknown never run, competed track and just, you know, popping in a 206, 207. And that made a huge change. And for me, even one of the equation earlier, maybe you may come and who, you know, influence you was a Bikila, a baby Bikila, a barefoot runner, and he came and spoke in school when I was some grade 8, grade 9, and he was, you know, hero. He was actually worshipped more than king at that time. Ethiopia used to be a monarchy system, and he ran a barefoot 1960 and 64, also winning back-to-back Olympic medal. His message inspired me, and he spoke and genuinely how poor he was and how running changed his mind. And if you believe in yourself, no anybody will stop you. And just don't take any conceivable reason to hold you back. And I don't have any shoes. And you can run. Running is one of the simplest form of exercise. Actually, you don't need a lot of gears. And I remember talking that, and that just still remains with me. And don't set barriers. Rather than setting barriers, just set a goal. No shortcuts, and be consistent. And it's not going to happen within a short time. To be patient and listening to him and sitting on the floor, and when he was speaking that, and that just struck me still in my mind. I just, you know, vividly still I can remember those conversations. He's the one actually. His message is one changed my life.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get the chance to tell him that?
Well, no, he died, and after that, he got a car accident in 1974, and that was about 1970. That opportunity to have an tui. After that, he has paralyzed, and again, when I saw him, and actually, he, you know, I thought he's a huge, you know, figure, but he's just like an ordinary man, like a little guy in a wheelchair confined, and also that told me as a part of us being human how vulnerable we are, and you know that's all things can go overnight, just you lost. So he was restricted in the wheelchair, and then after a couple of years I think he died.
Wow, that's sad, but you know, I'm glad his message was able to stay with you for life. And you mentioned about vulnerability, which is something that I talk about often, and I kind of very passionate about, because I feel like that's not necessarily a weakness in people to show your vulnerability. And, you know, I've seen a few things where you kind of think that same thing. So why is it you think we're so afraid to show the vulnerability, and then why do you not hide from it?
Well, I guess that's depending on the individuals, and I believe we are humans, and you know, even though culturally in the boys now not supposed to cry, you don't have as I seen as a weakness, more the cultural, and to me, you know, that's who we are. And if you don't show those weaknesses, if you don't shed the tears, and for when you get sad and when you get happy. That's who we are, even though we try to deny and pretend we are no machoism, but we possess all those qualities and personality. And to be me, and even yesterday, actually, I spoke such a thing in one of the inner schools, and they asked me why you feel comfortable actually sharing so deep personal things. And I said, well, that's what it is, and that's what it was. And for me, I hope someone learns from that and just, you know, keep a message and not to miss out. And you know, education is very important for me, and my mom taught me. And secondly, and when I was younger and barefoot and school was, you know, picked on and bullied and as a being uncivilized and pagan and those kind of names it was called. And So that did not pretend and prepare, hold me back, actually, what I want to achieve. So I just sharing those things, absolutely, you are right. Some people, it's too personal, but already book is out there, and I don't have to just put it everything, of course, and except few detailed, and some of them my family, you know, especially during the war, exactly some of the detail I did not share, but the most of my life story is on the shelf there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and you did put those out, like we mentioned earlier, in your autobiography, and that is available for purchase.
Well, it's available. I think now we're out of print, and we have a few copies, and now the things have changed since that book was in 2006, and also actually my life have evolved even for better. Mm-hmm. So we may have to add some of those things soon, and maybe we'll touch, if you would like a copy, able to mail one.
Yeah, no, I know. We'll put a link to it in the show notes for people to purchase if they can get a hold of it. And that will be at runnersconnect.net/109. And then, so, you know, you've mentioned all these things you've achieved, and you know, you did your honorary Doctor of Law degree in 2014. You know, we've talked about what you've been doing in politics, that you were even, you know, approached about being mayor. And I mean, I can't even imagine how much more you can add. But what do you see as your future kind of coming to you as of right now?
Well, I guess the future right now, I'm home stay dad. You know, when you are 61 years old, a lot of people, their retirement, not having a 5-year-old son at home. So my wife is, you know, quite a little bit younger than me. She, you know, her career is going very well, and we talked about it. And rather than she stay home, I chose to stay home. That's and wonderful. At the same time, I do workshops and I do speaking and coaching. I do have my club. And it just expand those things for me. And all these things evolve. Even it just comes, the knocks, opportunity knocks on my door. And when it happens, even I don't plan. And there are so many things still need to be done. And I'm quite involved in the community and eradication of poverty. And that's the one I could not stand. And how the poverty actually denies the opportunity for the people. Mm-hmm. You know, First Nations in Canada, probably you have read, and some of them struggling newcomers, and I do help them, mentor them. Even this is some people I coached, and they managed to secure the scholarship and track scholarship and achieve the great career. And so I'm going to keep doing those things. And for me, it's not really retirement. It's not an issue. As far as my mind is working and physically still able to do, just keep doing those things, you know, until I could not do them. Otherwise, there's no any time limits.
Mm-hmm. I love that you, you know, don't have these specific, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. You kind of allow life to unfold as it should. And I've kind of been working on that a lot recently. And it is a better way to live, because, you know, you just let opportunities happen and you know, approach them as they mm-hmm. unfold. And, you know, I've always believed that good things happen to good people. And, you know, you are the perfect example of that. So it's great to see. And then are you still running yourself?
Yes, I run. And even this morning, you know, we do have a close to 45 runners. And we go 5:30 in the morning. Some is a family from all walks of life. And just coach them. And this morning, done again, evening, I have. And so some people run a road track, but I used to coach university college kids. But now this is more road runners.
Okay.
A more kind of fitness people just do for fitness, even they don't compete. And even some walkers, actually, in my group. So all walks of life. So, and some people, they have a quite high caliber runner, still run about 32, 35, 36, 10K.
Great.
And some people like to qualify for Boston every year. And we send a few people towards Boston and New York. So they need to qualify for that distance. Mm-hmm. And I just help them, guide them, and enjoy, you know, their success. And it's actually rewarding when someone, you know, achieve the goal. That's what actually I love to do.
I could definitely see that. And for someone listening who just doesn't happen to know about this group, where could they find more information about it?
We do have a jaladapacers.com if you are able to visit. I think I have a two website, and tabjalada.com and jaladapacers.com.
Okay, I will put links to those in the show notes as well. Okay, we're just going to pause for a minute just to hear from our sponsor, and then we will be back with the final kick round.
Okay.
Depending on where you are in the world, summer or winter is coming. We only have a few precious weeks of this ideal running weather before the mental battles begin. Music or podcasts can make those long training days much easier, and I love to listen to 90s music to get me through the really tough parts. Jabra Pulse is the wireless sports earbud that was designed with runners in mind. Yes, that means no slipping out of your ear on those hot summer days, especially with the customizable in-ear pieces. It even has an accurate in-ear heart rate monitor, so you can use that to make sure those easy days stay easy. Yeah, just like you promised. I love mine, and I've run with musical podcasts more in these past few months than I have in the rest of my life combined. That is how great these are. Runners Connect listeners can get exclusive offers and enter to win a free Jabra Pulse headset by signing up at jabra.com/runnersconnect. That's jabra.com/runnersconnect to start your journey, or buy the Jabra Pulse at your local Best Buy. Jabra, this is where it starts. Okay, and we're back. So I just have the final kick questions for you. This is going to be a really interesting one, but what is the greatest advice you've ever received, or is it what we heard earlier?
Well, I guess the greatest advice I received of barefoot marathon runner Abebe Bekele when he came and spoke to school. I was the one of the fortunate enough to attend his speaking event, and you know, we first, you know, we hear about him like a hero, and that he's just highly regarded internationally. So I was so eager to hear what he has to say. He was very simple man, and easily approachable. And, you know, his message was no shortcuts. And if you set your mind and if you do the work, anything's possible. He was right. And no shortcuts. Again, he repeated that, and you have to be patient. Things will happen, and even if you encounter the setbacks, and take as a learning rather than at the end of dreams. And I remember he was sharing, and also his own upside down, and also meeting him after he was paralyzed, and how all those things have just changed like a movie, and just great, and again sad, and he, you know, suddenly he's gone. So his advice is still, and as an adult, still just, you know, I do have his quotes actually in my office. So always his great quotes and his pictures on my wall.
That's great that you can see that every day. And, you know, that's just wonderful. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Your favorite running book or blog?
You know, particularly, I just don't have any favorite, but I read all the science journals and in new ideas, and even Runner's World and British Runner's World, US Runners, every running magazine. But they often, the blog I go read, IAAF, that the International Amateur, that's website, and or quite at least daily about international runners who's hot, and he's, you know, the young upcoming, and I go frequently visit that website.
Could you see yourself doing something in the future with IAAF?
I don't know if, you know, it's possible, and everything, you know, comes, and even I like to be part of that. And I was so excited. And I remember even going meeting in Ethiopia, those run, usually when I go back, I just run with them. And so even when I was competing in my master's circuits, and some of those Kenyan African runners, and sometimes the people take advantage of them because of the language barrier, and you know, I understand them. Some of them end up losing their prize money. I remember when I was competing. So even in that capacity, just to advise them, to help them, no, anybody takes advantage of those people.
That's great that you give them that advice, and I'm sure that
Always on and off actually get the email from them, advise them, make sure before you sign, you understand what you're signing.
That's so important, and you know, we need more people like you in this world, because that's obviously an issue that's going on within the world of running. So it's great.
Absolutely, I'm sure you may have heard that the behind the scenes we don't hear, and some of the they're winning a lot of pride, but that they don't see penny that, then maybe they take a small portion of it.
It's just wrong. We need to make some changes here. We can work on this together.
Thank you.
Okay, what would you like to tell a new runner?
It especially comes to real runner, even as a myself, as a coach, my number one advice when you take up the sport or running, to join a running club, mm-hmm. or someone have some sort of running experience rather than just, you know, read. There's so many information out there, system and in that can cause setback or injury. Mm-hmm. Have someone to guide you, join a club, be patient and no shortcuts. And even some people just, I'm going to start running marathon right away, planning career that distance 42 kilometers. I wish I just advise them for maybe 2-3 years, run 5Ks, mm-hmm. 10Ks, mm-hmm. half marathon gradually and get used to your body. And then, and so we, you want to keep running as a lifestyle rather than just run one and have a bad experience, quit. So I prefer beginners just to join the club or with someone coaching advice.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're huge fans of that at Runners Connect. I mean, we have our coaching, but, you know, it is so important having that outside opinion to, like you said, prevent injuries and make sure, like you said, it becomes a lifelong thing rather than something you get excited about at the start and then burn out. So thank you. That's, I'm glad you mentioned that. What is or was your pre-race meal?
Well, that's another one. Pre-race meal, I guess in a way, myth, I don't know what to say. And we just go doing the carb loading. For me, the day before what you ate, it's not going to make that huge. It will not create a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
just eat right. Just eat to train. Fuel your body as an athlete. When overall your diet's actually one plays very important role for you. So usually day before race, what I do, I have done what works for me. Have a bigger breakfast and bigger lunch, but have a lighter meal and supper, and has to be, I don't put a lot of meat, or I don't consume even usually plain pasta or rice. Usually I eat. So in Ethiopia, we grew up with a simple carbohydrate. In Africa, that's what usually we eat, very simple. It does not upset your tummy when you are competing.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure there's enough time to digest and, to clear your system, able to perform. If your tummy get upset and if you eat a known meal, you are not helping yourself. So may not able to finish your race. So trial and error, whatever works for the individuals, but my suggestion is not to eat a heavy meal overnight, mm-hmm. and maybe 5 o'clock, 4:30, usually make sure you have enough time to digest early in the morning and to clear up your system.
And do you have something in the morning as well, or is that?
Usually for me, depending what I'm running, it's a 10K, 5K, maybe 2 hours before, I have a piece of dry toast and a cup of coffee and water. That's what usually I do. If I eat too much, just I could not perform.
Mm-hmm.
I avoid eating a morning. And marathon, and the same situation, and even it's not. And I don't eat much. I make sure I have a little bit in my tummy and coffee, of course, and the dry toast, usually that's what usually I eat before marathon. There's no need. If you train, if you are fit, actually, you don't need that.
Mm-hmm.
But depending your fitness level, actually, as even when I just noticed even myself, when a little bit out of shape, I tend to actually drink water. But when I'm actually in my highest level of fitness, even for half marathon, I don't drink water.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I guess half marathon I might drink once, but yeah. I mean, I guess when you are in your peak shape, you would have been running around an hour. So, that's right on that borderline of where you can get away with it. So that makes sense.
There for a long time, you are right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing. Yeah. And finally, a favorite running product.
Well, that's another one. And, it's not really, things have changed the last, 3-4 years in my running career. Growing up in Ethiopia, I was running a barefoot. That's another one, a sport itself. You don't need a lot of gadget.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, my favorite running product is running flat, racing flat, and that has to be very light and soft.
Mm-hmm.
For me, shoes, I use it as a to protect me from the harmful object when I'm hitting the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a trouble even when I have those stability shoes, heavier shoes, I tend to have an issue. Even on the grass, still I run barefoot actually when I have a, you know, golf course. And I found, and in Canada, and also, you know, weathers could be very extremely harsh winter time.
Yeah.
Some of the winter running gears, they are one more I have to, because if I'm from Africa, I still lived for almost 35 years, I still struggle with the cold weather. Some of the technology like tights and windbreaker and those ones are my favorite products winter time. In terms of watch garment, I don't own.
Yeah, I didn't expect that.
That one, I run by how I feel.
That's how you what. Should.
Yeah, the same thing for me. Even a lot of they spend a lot of expensive gadgets and you know, those heart rate monitors, and even my wife owns those Garmin. She about 500. Are you going to spend? Okay, you can, but not me. But even I don't use that. I use the simple Timex watch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't have to convince me. I'm all about intuition as well. I do have a Garmin. I do use my Garmin, but I'm definitely all about intuition when it comes to running. So I'm with you right there.
Yeah.
Well, Ted, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. I'm sure our listeners are going to have learned so much and just a whole change of perspective. So I really appreciate your time.
Okay, thanks, Tina. And keep in touch. Thanks.
Well, I told you he was inspirational. You can see why he's been so successful in everything he's put his mind to. He's just one of those people you can just sit down and listen to for hours. I just wanted to take in every single nugget of wisdom he could give me. So I just want to say congratulations to Christina Dujic for winning the Jabra headphones for this month. So make sure you enter to win next month at jabra.com/runnersconnect. Next week, I'm going to be bringing back Born to Run author Chris McDougall, and you're going to hear what he's been up to and what book he's working on next. And I just want to give you a hint, it involves a donkey. Yep, you're going to have to tune in to make sure you find out. Make sure you click subscribe on your iPhone, iPad, Android, or podcast player to get the episodes delivered directly to you every Wednesday. So until then, have a great week.